Welcome back to In the Post right here on SB Nation Radio. I am Joe George alongside one of the greatest players and a Hall of Famer, Elvin Hayes. And as we do every week, we like to bring you fun interviews from some of the best players in the history of basketball. Right now, we welcome in another great one. We welcome in Bernard King. Bernard, welcome to In the Post. How are you today?
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to join you, Joe, and then obviously the Big E, Elvin Hayes, as I respectfully know him. And I grew up watching Elvin Hayes as a young kid, and I had the honor to play against him for a period of 8 years, I believe.
Well, Bernard, I tell you, those were some great years playing against you and watching you play because, you know, you're a Hall of Famer. You just had an illustrious career. You know, when you look at, you know, the players you played against and when you see some of these guys today, you know, what comes to mind? Because they're really pressing the triple-doubles. They're really pressing the three-pointers. I know you could shoot the three-pointer, so, you know, I didn't have that much, you know, fortune to be able to shoot a three-pointer. But how you see this game today versus, you know, when you were playing and the players you played against?
Well, as you well know, the era that we played in, the three-point shot was not a shot of emphasis. It certainly wasn't during the bulk of my NBA career. Obviously, you were a great player and an outstanding outside shooter, Elvin, and I'm sure you would have been able to adapt to that if that was required of your skill sets. You know, I think it's an interesting game because you don't have the dominant big man in the game today, like yourself, like Kareem, and all the other great bigs that were in the league at that time. So, and the influx of European players, I believe, has had a tremendous influence on how the game is played today. When you look at the pick and pop, and pick and roll was always there, but the pick and pop and the emphasis on shooting three-point shot, that's European style of basketball, keeping the floor open. Yeah. And you see that particularly with the obviously the Golden State Warriors. But when we talk about big men, I have to step back in time, Joe, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, go for it.
I have to go back to 1968. The game of the century is known as when Elvin Hayes and his Houston Cougars went up against Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and the UCLA Bruins, and they were ranked number one. And they consider that the most legendary game in history. UCLA came with a 47-game winning streak. You know that because you were there.
Yeah.
And your team was then undefeated going into that game. I'm curious. I have to ask, what was that like for you?
Probably, Bernard, that was probably one of the greatest nights because, you know, Jabbar's star had been shining so bright through high school and into college. And then for me, you know, playing in the Southwest, a lot of people didn't know University of Houston and didn't know me. And then coming into that game that night, you know, my objective was to take his star down and to replace it with mine. And I knew that I had the opportunity to maybe become, you know, college player of the year and also get drafted number one into the NBA. So that night meant an awful lot for me. And to go out and to outplay him and outscore him on one end and out-rebound him on another end, it was just one of those super great nights. I think it happens in an athlete's life where you get that perfect situation. And that night in the Astrodome was just a perfect situation.
Well, you guys made history. Hey, Joe, a sidebar to that game, and Elvin, you don't know this as well. The point guard on that UCLA team was Mike Warren.
You bet.
Yeah, and Mike Warren and I starred in a movie together in 78 rather, called Fast Break with Gabe Kaplan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had a good time shooting that. So that's an interesting sidebar to that game that you played that day.
It's in the post right here on SB Nation Radio. Yeah, when I moved to Houston about 2 years ago, I realized I knew of the game and I'd seen the highlights and I knew its importance. But once I actually moved to Houston, it opened my eyes to realize that game was such an incredible accomplishment and for what it meant to the game of basketball. You know, Elvin was just talking about when he played against Kareem in that game and how much of a challenge it was and how he could take that star power from him. When you were coming up through the NBA, was there one guy that you knew you had to go against and you wanted to dethrone and kind of take over as the better basketball player?
Well, obviously my objective going into the league was to simply be the best. That's the objective of any talented player, and I worked accordingly. But my standard at my position, Elvin was a big forward. I was a small forward. So we didn't defend each other. But my standard was Dr. J, comparable Julius Erving. And he was my standard. And we played my rookie year, the first game, guys, against Cleveland on the road. And I was nervous. You know, like Elvin, I was nervous.
Oh, yeah.
I scored 13 points. I never scored 13 points in my life. And we go home the next night, and we face Philly and the great Dr. J, as many thought, the greatest player on the planet Earth at the time, many thought.
Yeah.
And I'm 20 years old. And I have to go against Doc on behalf of my team, the Nets. Unfortunately, we lost that game down the stretch by 3 points, so we're in it all the way, and turnovers really cost us that game. But at 20 years old, when you're able to score 42 points against Dr. J, you feel pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. So you saw Dr. J up close and personal, obviously, like you just said, one of your first games you played against him. For the people of my generation who didn't get to see him as much or really at all, what was so special about Dr. J on a night-in and night-out basis?
Well, he was an all-around player, but what he had more traditionally that of the game itself from the forward position, with traditionally that of the game itself from the forward position, with traditionally that role is incumbent upon the point guard. And he just was able to be able to control it from the offensive side and also on the defensive end of the floor because of his great shot-blocking ability. And then when you talk about what he's like in the open floor and how he just soared to the moon when he was going in for a dunk was truly special. Now, I didn't stop to watch that when I played it.
I know what you mean. I had an opportunity to be on the other end of one of those. When we did, Julius, I talked to him about that, you know, having that fear of being dunked on by him, and ended up getting it one night in Washington, D.C. But
oh, did you?
Yeah. But Bernard, you know, your game was such a high intensity game. You ran the floor. You rebound extremely well. You did every phase of the game. And I'm talking about against guys who basically you played against night in and night out was Hall of Fame guys who ended up being Hall of Fame guys. And it's just truly amazing to watch you out there on that basketball court and performing against the high level of competition which you performed against. And you give us some of those names of some of those players that – You had to go out there against every night.
Well, one of them were your teammates, and that team hit of yours was Bobby Dandridge.
Yes, Bobby.
On that championship winning team of yours in 1957, with Wes Unseld, yourself, and Bobby D, Phil Chenier, Kevin Greeley, all those great guys that were on that championship team. But Bobby Dandridge is one of the all-time greats, and he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Totally agree with you. Totally agree.
And I hope that that the Hall will rectify that and add him to that to really select group. And then you think about Rick Barry as well. And I tell you, there was a play and against Rick Barry, my team against his. He was with Golden State. And he came across the lane, and you know what I'm about to say probably, Elvin.
Oh, yeah.
He came across the lane, and I'm defending Joe, and he trapped my arm under his armpit.
Yeah.
And he yelled.
Yeah, and that was his favorite flop.
Yeah, and the referee blew the whistle and called a foul on me. And I took note of that. And I told Rick this, I used that move throughout my entire career. I go across the lane on a play called 42, which is across screen from right to left.
Yes.
And I would come across the lane, strap my defender's arm underneath my arm, and pin it to my side and yell.
And you're going to get that call. He did it many, many years. You know, when we look at the game today and you see guys like James Harden and kind of just get, you know, your analysis on it, you know, which Russell Westbrook right now, he just, you know, broke Oscar's record. And, you know, he's going to be the MVP in the league. You also have, you know, people down here in Houston pulling for James. And you have all of the, you know, these two head-on-head players just playing, doing some tremendous things this year.
Well, you know, I think that obviously each of those players are deserving of winning the MVP.
Yes.
I think that so when you talk about the greatness of each of them and what James, what Harden has done with the Houston Rockets, you bring in a new coach this year, and D'Antoni, and he didn't miss a beat. And not only did he miss a beat, he elevated his game.
Yes.
And if you might remember, last year, although the official MVP award was not given to Harden, the players actually voted him MVP.
That's true.
Last year. And Westbrook has done something that's really unprecedented, other than what Oscar Robertson, the Big O, did. And I'm glad to see that it's really coming to light, really the dominance of the Big O, who did it for six seasons, not just one.
That's right.
So it's great to see that he's being recognized now by today's world of basketball. But I think when you look at what's required to go out and average a triple-double every night, I cannot imagine that. Now, you, Elvin, you average a double-double every night. You know?
Most, yes.
So and you don't really see that much any longer. But a triple-double, that's simply amazing. And so I think both players are deserving. Hopefully there'll be a co-MVP.
Well, that's what I would think. I think that this is a year where you should have co-MVPs because if you give it to Westbrook, you're not going to have people really excited about it. If you give it to Harden, you're going to have people on the other side not excited about it. So you are very much correct. They should have an MVP.
Let me ask each of you this question. I'm just curious. Now, the MVP award, should that go to the best player in the league, or should that go to the most valuable player in the league based on his roster?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And what I always felt that player is the most valuable player in the league, that's what you're basically saying. But because of the fact that if you look where James have taken his team this year, if it was done by a team situation where, you know, the Rockets have won over 50-some games this year, where Oklahoma haven't, you know, from a team standpoint, James have been more valuable to the team in complimenting other players on his team, where Russell is basically, you know, he's carrying that Oklahoma team. And once again, it's about what's happening in the league, as you said. Is that mean the whole league? And I would think it would be that if that player left Oklahoma, could he go and fit in on another team? Now, Harden have done that. He played with two superstars in Oklahoma, Russell and Durant, and he performed up there admirably when he came off the bench. But now all of a sudden now, is he the most valuable player in the league? And I think, you know, that would be a thing that one would have to look at.
It's in the post here on SB Nation Radio. You know, Bernard, I think it's an interesting, you know, debate and topic about what the MVP trophy truly means. Because I remember back, you know, just a couple years ago when Anthony Davis, with all of his might, willed the Pelicans into the playoffs as the eighth seed, and they got swept by the Warriors the year they won the championship. I think it's fair you could have given it to Anthony Davis that year. And just like when I think Derrick Rose won it, I think he was the MVP. LeBron James was the better player, but without Derrick, I mean, that Bulls team is just absolutely nothing. I think it's interesting. I think it should go to the player that if you take them off the team, they're clearly not as good. And to me, I think James Harden, you take him off the Rockets, I think they're a bottom-of-the-barrel basketball team because a lot of the same talent has been extremely unsuccessful everywhere else they've played.
Right.
just like with the Pelicans, like I just mentioned, Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson were on that team, and they're not the players that James Harden, he makes them. So I think it's incredible. I look at, you know, guys like John Wall and Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee and Washington. I think they're deserving of more credit. But, yeah, I think it's an incredible debate of what an actual MVP should mean. I personally think, Bernard, there should be two different trophies. I think there should be a most valuable player and a player of the year, because I think there is a difference. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. That would be rather interesting. I like the intrigue that's associated with the way that is structured today, because it's a conversation we wouldn't be having right now. So it makes for a very interesting conversation on air, as well as from the fan bases as well. And again, they're both deserving. Harden has had a tremendous year, great, great season, and as well as Westbrook. But Joe, I'll take you back to a different period, however, okay, if I may.
Yeah, go for it.
1983-84. I had a tremendous year. My team made the playoffs with the New York Knicks, averaged 26 points a game. And going into the playoffs, so we played five-game series, where I averaged a then NBA record, 42 points a game for five straight games. You got the Detroit Pistons, who we ultimately defeated, and wound up playing Boston Celtics in the great Larry Bird with four Hall of Famers. Unfortunately, we lost that seventh game in Boston. If it was in New York, I thought we would have won it.
Yeah.
Now, the press voted Larry Bird MVP that year, and the players voted me MVP. So I take you to that period.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's interesting. You see the players and the press, their mindset is so different when it comes to the MVP. And, I mean, for this year, I almost just wish they could vote after the playoffs and just say whoever wins in the first round between the Rockets and the Thunder gets the MVP, because they're going to play in the first round, so that's probably the best way to decide it, who advances in the playoffs. But, Bernard, I got to ask, you mentioned the Hall of Fame earlier, and you're definitely – I mean, you're in the Hall of Fame now. You're top 50 all-time in scoring, but it took a while for you to get in. Did you feel like at one point you were never going to get that call, even though you were well-deserving of that? Like you mentioned, a guy like Bobby Dandridge earlier, you were well-deserving to be in the Hall of Fame much sooner than you actually got in.
Well, thank you for sharing that. However, the Hall of Fame is not an entitlement. No one is other than Elvin Hayes.
Oh, my. Thank you. So complimentary.
And I welcome the idea that, and I relish it, and I cherish it, that I am in the Hall of Fame amongst the great ones like the Big E and Walt Frazier and Willis Reed and Earl Monroe. I go back to the Knicks players there. And so that's very, very truly special. But I never thought about it in those terms. It's not something that you can dream about or build a goal for. What was really delightful to me is that my daughter, Mina, who's now enrolled in college, Spelman College as a freshman, was at an age where she could understand it.
Mm.
My wife never saw me play. My wife in 20 years never saw me play. So it was the timing was right for me, and I'm just glad it happened.
You know, Bernard, you came out of you born and raised in New York, come out of New York, but you attend school down in the South, down in Tennessee, which is, you know, really kind of a situation with all the great colleges back east. You know, what made you choose to go down south to go to school when you had, like, in New York City, St. John's, and you had the opportunity to play with the New York Nets, and you also played with the Knicks, and then right down the road with the Washington Bullets. And it's one of those things, it's like how you found your way down there.
Well, I tell you what happened, I had never been on a plane, and I had never really traveled at all as a young person growing up in Brooklyn. And having the opportunity to receive a basketball scholarship and decide where you'd like to play based on the various universities that was recruiting me at the time was really fascinating to me. And I wanted to see part of the country and to get out of New York. And so St. John's, you mentioned, yes, excellent university.
Yes.
Met with Louis Condesecker. I said, Louis, I'm not staying in New York. You know that. And here's what Louis said to me. He said, at least come have a good Italian dinner with me.
Oh yeah, he was that. He was amazing.
Yes, we went to one of his Italian haunts. But Ernie Grunfeld, who played at Tennessee, was from New York, Forest Hills, New York, played at Forest Hills High School.
Mm.
And he had been very successful the year earlier there at Tennessee. And we hit it off when upon my recruiting visit. And I thought that the style of play that Tennessee was playing at the time, the up-tempo style of basketball, and with Ernie and I, we would be able to form a very good chemistry since we had formed one during that recruiting trip. And that was a great time playing with Ernie. He's the best chemistry guy I've ever played with in basketball on any single level. But that, you know, that's, he had a great recruiting visit, great coaches there in terms of Coach Ray Mears and Sue Evening, the assistant coach, and I thought it would be a good place to play the game.
He is Bernard King, Hall of Famer, top 50 all time in scoring. He's joined us here on In the Post on SB Nation Radio. Bernard, it was a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joe. And Elvin, hey, it's always great to spend some time with you, and I look forward to seeing you down the road.